Okay, that's great. It's so much nicer just being a little bit more into the audience. Take just a couple of steps back and those lights just get you. All right, well, welcome along. I've got to get used to the slides there. So welcome along to Build for the Cloud Using the Cloud. So this is how to go from zero to online in 40 minutes or less. We'll see if we've got some time for a little bit of Q&A at the end. But I know that there's some things across the ways there, so I don't expect too much Q&A. If you stand between, you know, between the audience and the drinks, you've got no chance really. So by the numbers, that's me. My name's Anthony Borton. I'm a Microsoft Visual Studio ALM MVP and have been so for 8 years now. I've presented at TechEd in the US, in Europe, New Zealand and Australia. If you have a look up there, I'm the author of, I think I've got 8 TFS 2013 courses. So I spend probably about 70% of my time delivering training, helping people adopt TFS, Visual Studio Online. The remainder of that time, I'm in the field consulting, getting it all set up, getting it all working. I've done 59 Microsoft exams, and that goes back to exam 001. So that was MS-DOS 5 and microcomputer hardware, of all strange and interesting things. It was also a prerequisite for certification in Microsoft Word 2, which seems really interesting. Yeah, you know, knowing the most obscure command line switches and also knowing the you know, modes of operation of a CPU come in real handy when you're word processing. Anyway, most recently the exam I think was 7499. So if you're interested in Microsoft Certified Solution Developer Application Lifecycle Management, there's a mouthful. That's your recertification exam. So you've got to do that every 2 years to keep that cert up and alive. Something that my wife really loves when I point out is how many kilometers I've flown. I submitted these slides about a week ago, so that's off by 6,000 kilometers. So in the last 4 years, I've traveled 1,082,500 kilometers. That's a lot of travel. That's something I'm on my third trip up to the moon. So yeah, I do a lot of travel helping people adopt ALM best practices. That's enough for me. I've also done some Microsoft Virtual Academy courses. So Stephen Borg and I got together and did MVA sessions for the 3 exams that you would do for MCSD ALM. Anyway, that's enough about me. So the agenda, we get a great app idea and that leads us straight to an awesome life cycle, lifestyle, one of the life things. Correct? No. There's a lot more distance between those two things. Always something to get in the way, isn't there? And if we look at that distance, it's all about the details. From our great app idea that we've had in the shower one morning to the awesome lifestyle. For someone that says life cycle all the time, that's actually a hard word. You know, you've got to deal with requirements, capturing those sorts of things, getting them, you know, well, on paper, so to speak. We've also got to be able to, you know, develop the solution. We need enterprise class version control. We want to be able to build that solution, test the solution, do some load testing, application performance, a whole lot of things. And the scaffolding that that sits on is expensive and time consuming to set up. So if you have a look there, we might have TFS, a split app tier and a data tier there. We might have a build infrastructure, so we set up our build controller, our build agents. We might have multiple environments. So we might have our dev, our test environment, UAT, staging, production, and so forth. And then finally, you know, our production environment, which is, you know, where we want to be at the end of the day. So a lot of that takes a lot of time and effort to set up. So can we do something better there? If we can change that scaffolding, put that scaffolding up into the cloud so that we can, you know, save time and money, so that we can get, you know, our idea and hopefully in less than an hour, we can get everything set up and ready to go. So that's what we're looking at in this particular session. All right, so very, very few slides. So it's all demo, which is always exciting. Nothing can go wrong with that, I'm sure. So we'll just see how it goes, shall we? So in terms of getting set up, who's using Visual Studio Online? Who's set up a free account? Fantastic. Now, for the rest of you, you did hear me say free account. You know, so long as you've got a Microsoft account, you know, Hotmail, Live Passport, whatever name they give it today, you can go along and you can sign up for Visual Studio Online. Okay. Now, what does it cost to get one of those accounts? Well, it's free too, so that's a good start for us. We're going to go to www.visualstudio.com. We go in there and say, I want to get started for free. You choose a vanity URL. What name do you want, you know, the site to be known as? And then we're good to go. We want to then assemble the team. So in assembling the team, we've got a variety of different things there, our basic users. We've got a new, reasonably new thing called the stakeholder user. And that's really important. We can have an unlimited number of stakeholder user accounts. And as the name implies, these are, you know, people historically, I guess, we've had to buy client access licenses for and more. So now with free stakeholder accounts, they can keep an eye, a close eye on the project. They can go in there and, you know, work with the product backlog, see what's going on, look at some of the reports and charts. We've also got professional and then our advanced accounts there as well. So we've got to get the team together and get, you know, get started. So let's go ahead and do that. All right, let's get used to the switching. Oh, the switching works, this is good. So what you see here is I'm just in a browser. I've gone to www.visualstudio.com, like any of you can. I'm going to go and say I want to get started for free, please. So the first thing it's asking me, and I'm already signed in over here, is what would you like that to be? So my company's Enhance ALM. I could type enhancealm.visualstudio.com, and assuming no one else has taken it, we're all good. I've already taken it, so let's go with TechEd AU 2014. I'll go ahead and say create that account for me. And effectively that's going to hopefully go and create the equivalent of a team project collection in the Azure Data Center for me. So I think that's looking reasonably good so far, and it's going to give it to me. So that easily. Any idea how long it'd take for you guys to raise a requisition, to get some servers, to get your IT secure folks to roll the box out, to install TFS server? It's going to take a wee bit longer than that. So, you know, that's not too bad at all. What's our first team project going to be called? So I might, you know, start with a simple, actually, we'll go with my Simple Calc. And the description of this particular project, it doesn't get much simpler. I'm going to choose to stick with just Team Foundation version control, but as you can clearly see, Git's an option for me. And I've got three process templates that I can choose from. I'm going to go ahead and just choose the Scrum template and say create that project for me. Okay, so we can have multiple team projects in our Visual Studio Online account. And I certainly do have quite a few of them up there. So it's going to go ahead and create that for me. I'm then going to switch across to the administration page for that and start assembling the team. I'm just going to add one person, but you'll get the idea of what's involved there. Okay, done. So we now have my Simple Calc as a team project ready to go. I'll switch over to the admin screen. And you'll see I'm a big, busy team of, well, one person. So let's change that. I'll go in here and say I'd like to add other people. And again, these people either need to be in my Azure Active Directory or have a Microsoft account, which is great for, you know, if you're working with other people around the world, they don't need to be in our corporate AD. I'll go here and let's add another person. Save that. Because I'm using Azure Active Directory, it's going to pop up and remind me that they need to be added into that, and of course in this case they already are. I'm going to go over here and, you know, for my simple web-based calculator, I want to give this team an identity. So let's go and have a little avatar for the team. Let's go and grab a graphic, and this one's going to be very suitable. It's going to be an abacus, you know, nothing, you know, too technical. Of course, I might go over here and specify some details about the team, and let's go and make myself, you know, an administrator for this particular team, so I can set up multiple teams of people quickly and easily. Okay, so that's not looking too bad for us. I'll close out of the admin page now. So I've assembled my team of people, all two of us, and What I will do next is I'm going to go over here and choose to open in Visual Studio a connection to this. So what you're going to see is Team Explorer on the right-hand side after it's going to ask me to authenticate as my guests. And ignore that. All right, so I go ahead and authenticate there. You can see the little E there. You can tell how many times I rehearsed. That's all right. So I'll go in there and I'll configure my workspace mapping. I'm going to map that to a local disk for my source files, VSO 6 / workspaces will do for me. And I'll go ahead and map that. So just setting up a workspace so that when I do a get, when I work on some files, I've got that offline cache on my local machine. So that's been set up for me and that's all good. The final thing I want to do there is, let's go and have a look at that. So VSO6 workspaces. So there's the root of that workspace mapping, and I want to grab a little mark. Where is it? There it is. I'm just going to drop that little README markdown file in the middle of it. Switch back to my browser now, and when I have a look at the welcome screen, you'll see that I've got a customized welcome screen there. Very, very simple. Just a little bit of markdown there, and of course that's not going to work for me. What did I forget? A really elementary, simple thing. Guess who didn't check the file in? Yeah. All right, so that's going to make a little bit of difference for me. So let's just pop back over here. I'll go into my pending changes, grab that detected, promote that. Added a custom welcome page. Check that in. And now, if we go back over here and have a look at that welcome page, that's a little bit nicer. So all you do there is just set up a little welcome screen for the people that you're going to connect, put any information in here about the particular project and what's going on there. A very, very straightforward thing. All right. So we're on our way. Click the right button. It's going to make a world of difference. Fantastic. Okay, so we've got ourselves, we've provisioned the boxes effectively. We've got our Visual Studio Online account. We've assembled the team. They've received an email welcoming them along. So that's all working okay. The next thing we need to do is we need to get our requirements in there. We need to start building out and getting the backlog started. So we're going to go into an enterprise class work item tracking system, where I'm able to go and put my requirements in there. We're going to use the hierarchical requirements that have been available in 2013. So we'll create some items on the backlog. We'll then group those together as a feature. Now, of course, remember we could do things like put our bugs, test cases, test plans, test suites. These are all work items. So being able to work on those in the cloud is, you know, critically important for our wonderful journey to an awesome lifestyle. I'm saying that a little slower to get the lifestyle part of it correct. All right, so let's have a look at that. And what you're seeing there is a bit of cadence, lots and lots of demos for us. So let's switch back over there. Okay, so in terms of getting our product backlog started, what I want to do is I want to set up some iterations here. We've had, you know, dataware iterations since 2012, which is good. I'll go in and say I want to set dates for sprint one. I'll say that I want to start that, well, today's a good day, so I'll start it now. And that sprint's going to run through to, you know, for a couple of weeks. Finishing sprints on Friday, never a good idea, but I'll do it anyway. I'll go and pop in some dates and put some dates in for sprint two. Automatically helps me there. Okay, so we've got those sprint dates all ready to go. Okay, now that's nice and hierarchical. I can sort of group those. I can set up releases, lots of different things I can do. Let's go ahead and have a look at our backlog now. So in terms of getting started, I'm going to have my product owner, my business analyst, whatever label you want to apply to that particular role, come along, and we're just going to use the quick add window here to create a couple of PBIs. Now remember, it's just a simple web-based application. So how about we allow users to add two numbers together, enter, allow users to subtract two numbers. I don't know what the, has it, yeah, a couple of typos there. That just adds authenticity, in my opinion. So just a quick add during our brain dump with the, you know, the stakeholders, we've talked about what we want in our simple web calculator. So we just dumped those things in. That's all there is to requirements, right? Okay, maybe not. But in terms of just getting those things fleshed out and started, that's perfectly good. Now, 2013, I said introduced hierarchical requirements. Okay, something we've wanted for a long time, granted. So what I want to do is I'm just going to step up to features now. And with those features, I'm going to create a feature. So what groups those things together? So I'll call this one web calculator. Add that. And we'll basically have that hierarchy there. We'll be able to, you know, look down to the weeds, the coalface workers, or we can roll those things up easily and give, you know, management the visibility they want while giving our team members, you know, those, you know, visibility at a much more granular, smaller level. So how do I link those things together? Well, I'm just going to switch back to the product backlog. I'm going to turn on my mapping. I'm going to say that that belongs to that feature, that belongs to that feature, and that just wires it up. It puts the bidirectional links in place for me. Okay, so I'll turn that mapping off. Now I'm done with it, and let's go and have a look. So now what I'm able to do is I'm able to see feature and then the, you know, child work items underneath it. Okay, so I'm starting to build out that backlog for us. I'll go back into just the product backlog now, and I just want to put a little bit of extra detail into these work items. So what I'll do is say that, you know, estimation, that's easy stuff, right? We always get that right. So this particular requirement, I'll say it's got an effort of 5 story points and a high business value. I'll save and close that. Let's open up the next one and say that that's also got an effort of about 5, but it's got a little bit of a less business value. So in terms of doing that estimation, and I take some liberty there. I mean, we could go and use all manner of agile estimation techniques there to come up with that as a team, always a good idea. I'm going to turn on, I mean, I've got no velocity here. It's a brand new project. So knowing what our team velocity is, well, it's a bit of a stab in the dark. What I'll do is say that I want to turn my forecasting on. And I believe that this team of Shane and I, in this case, I'm pretty sure we're going to do about 8 story points worth of effort. Okay, again, just a stab in the dark, given there's no history, no velocity we can refer back to. What that's done for me is it's had a look at the backlog, and it's a very, very basic, simple backlog. It's telling me that we can forecast to deliver each of those per sprint, when we'll have a bit of excess capacity there. I'm going to grab that PBI and assign it to my first sprint iteration, and that'll allow me to then to switch across to the sprint backlog, and let's have a look at that. So I've determined exactly what PBI, what user story, my team's going to focus on during that first sprint. I've gone into the sprint now, and what I want to do is in our sprint planning meeting now, let's start decomposing that requirement into the tasks that my team members are going to need to do. So the first task, keeping it nice and simple, is going to be create a new ASP.NET application. Now remember, these are microscopically small. They're not indicative of the size of these tasks that you'd want to do in the field. Ideally, I like to tell teams that we want to scale it so that a team member can complete 2 tasks per day. Now that's a whole debate and conversation, I'm sure. Probably not the best place to have that. Maybe over a couple of beers later, I'll be more than happy to do that with you. I'm a big fan, 2 tasks per day for each person. Okay, and that, you know, that's, you know, the psychology of coming to work and achieving and closing out 2 things every day. That's great. You know, you're working through the list. It's giving you good granularity on the burn down chart, not flatlining. We're worried. And then suddenly a few people close out some tasks and phew, there's no reason to worry at all. It also means that we look at those requirements and we need to think about them down to the level of 2 per day. Okay, it helps ensure a good level of understanding of the requirement. So anyway, that's my opinion anyway. So I've seen a few smiles there while I've been talking, so maybe there's some disagreement or agreement. It's for a later time. I'm going to choose to, I'll assign that to myself, as opposed to self-assigning it a little bit later on. I'm going to estimate that that's about an hour. And now that's, you know, putting that time there is really just for my sprint and my burn down, not for anything else. We've estimated the amount of work in our story points. I'll choose to now save and close that particular piece of work. Okay, so there's the requirement and I've started the decomposition. Now I want to manage or look at the capacity of my team. So I'm going to pop into the team and I'm going to say that I'm available over the life of this sprint for on average about 4 hours a day. Shane only needs half the amount of time to do the same amount of work as me. I'll choose to go in there and maybe she's going to do the testing, I'm going to do development. And over to the right-hand side there, you start to see our capacity in terms of the team, the activities, or the individuals down below. All right, so that's good news for us. So I'm going to go back to stay on this page and save it. I love those nag screens when they remind you to do the right thing. What I'll do is I'm just going to switch back over to Visual Studio for a moment. In Visual Studio, I'm going to choose to pop over here. I'm going to have a look at our work items. I'm going to choose to go and have a look at, in the current sprint, our unfinished work. And there are those two particular work items up there. Now, I was halfway back. I'm sure you can't read the finer details up there. That's fine. I could zoom in. It's not technically interesting anyway. So I've just got that first requirement, a task underneath it. What's the, and someone down the front can just yell it out, what's the most popular or commonly used project management tool in the world today? Anyone want to have a guess? Excel spreadsheet was the one that I wanted to hear. That's excellent. Okay. And Project Server rocks. Yeah, no, that's a joke. So I'm going to go down here and let's go ahead and open that in Excel. And, you know, if you prefer to work in Excel, you can. There's some Project Server people out there, I can tell. Did I offend? All right, so I'm just going to pop over into here. I'm going to choose my columns. I'm going to add any required fields that are needed to allow me to save work items. I'm just going to highlight that row, grab a couple of blank ones underneath it, and just Control D, which is simply fill down. I'll pop back over to the right-hand side here, and I'm just going to start putting in a couple of those tasks. So when I want to grab the requirement and decompose or break that down into the individual tasks, typically in the sprint planning meeting, I'll go in here and say the next things I want to do is update the homepage. I'll go in there and add a calculation class. I'll go and deploy to Azure and we'll create a CD build. Okay, now I can go and change the details there. I'm just going to leave it assigned to me for now. I'll say that they're all an hour, but of course, you know, you can work with that. Having done that, notice over here on the left-hand side, you might be able to see that I've got work item IDs 1 and 4. Below that, the 4 new ones that I've added have no work item IDs yet. Okay, they only exist in Excel. When I'm ready, I'll go ahead and choose to publish that. It's going to send that information over to TFS, and now those work items have been created for me in TFS. So if you like using Excel, keep using Excel. If you like using Project, you're wrong. Beers later, happy to have that chat. Let's get back out of there. I'll go ahead and exit out of there. Now I've done some good work, should I save it? And of course the answer is no. I mean, all that information's now been published over to TFS, in this case, Visual Studio Online. Okay. Honestly, it wouldn't make any difference if it was VSO or TFS. I'll say don't save that, I don't need to. I'll come back over here and do a quick refresh. Okay, so there are those tasks that I've been working on, and I'm pretty happy with that. I'll go back into the web-based UI. I'll go and have a look at my backlog. My sprint backlog should now show those remaining tasks. If I wanted to, I can... what I might do is let's go and create a new query. And I want to show a little feature, which is the work item charting, if you haven't seen it. So I'm going to go and say I want to create a new query. And this query, hey Wardy, this query is going to simply return all work items in the current team project. And that's what we see down the bottom there. I'm going to say that I'd like to create, or actually let's go ahead and save that. All work items in team project. And I'm going to go and put that as a shared query. And I'll click on OK there. I'm going to select charts up the top and choose to create a new chart. So I can create a chart on any flatlist query today. I'll say pie chart's fine. Notice we've got some trend charts down the bottom there. I'll say use work item type. And that creates a very simple little chart for me. And I'll say OK. Here's a little chart, and I'd like the team to be able to see that, to be able to see what work item types there are. I mean, it's not a particularly interesting chart on this occasion, but of course, you know, it's up to whatever query I want to create. What data can I put in the chart? Well, whatever fields are returned by that work item query. So let's go and add that to the homepage so that whenever the team go to their homepage, there's the chart down the bottom. I'll get rid of that little placeholder at the top, and we start to build that out. So I could create a whole collection of work item charts up there. Those charts could show how many priority one bugs we've got, severity one bugs, how many outstanding PBIs exist within the current sprint. So work item charting is a very, very easy thing for us to do. Okay, so I'll go ahead and leave that now. Switch back to some slides over here. So far we've been able to create the project, we've gone and put our requirements in there, done our task decomposition, so we're well on the way to moving from that great app idea, you know, a web-based calculator, that's unique, across to that, you know, awesome lifestyle. All right, so the next thing we want to have a look at there is source control. So our developers need a nice enterprise class scalable version control solution. And the good news is, of course, that we can easily place that in the cloud as well. I want a place where I can go and do whatever, you know, branching that I want to work with. I still want to maintain full bidirectional traceability. So when I check some code in, I want to be able to associate that back to the task. From the task, be able to step that back up to the PBI, from the PBI back to the feature in this case. Now that's a capability of TFS. We've had that for quite a while, and that's carried through to Visual Studio Online. All right, let's see how we go with that one. All righty. So I'll go back to Visual Studio on this occasion. I'm going to go into my work over here. In my work, we're going to see the available work items, and there's one there that says create a new ASP.NET application. I'm just going to drag that up to in-progress work. For those of you that have used earlier versions of TFS, remember we used to do the work and then link it to the work item at check-in, which seems a little back the front now in hindsight. So I've just said that this is what I'm about to start work on by dragging it up. One of the benefits of that is if I go over and have a look at my task board, you'll see that that card sprint, board. That card now sits over here in the in-progress column. So everyone can see exactly what I'm working on. I don't need them to interrupt my train of thought, tap me on the shoulder and say, what are you doing? Well, maybe they're going to do that for me anyway. So by simply dragging that up, it gives them a nice indicator of what's going on. Now, of course, I'd open that work item. I'd have a look at the task that we determined I needed to do. And I'll go up here and say, file, new project. Okay, it's going to be a very simple little web application. I'll pop down here and say that it's going to be called My Simple Calc. And I've got a typo in there. We better not do that. And I'm trying to remember exactly where we put it. Down into here. That's a good place. And I'll say OK. I'll add unit tests. It's going to be a very simple web form. I'll change the authentication. We don't want it in this sample. And then, of course, over here, as a web application, I've got a choice. If I wanted to, I can use Microsoft Azure to host this, which is great. I don't need to go and provision those boxes myself. I can say I want to provision it as an Azure website, or I can provision it as a VM. Okay, I'll go ahead and just say leave it as an Azure website for now. I'll say OK. Okay, mysimplecalc.azurewebsites.net is available for me, so that's good news. The region, look at that. That's fantastic and none too soon. So of course, that was one of the announcements that you heard this morning about those Azure data centers in Sydney and Melbourne being available. So I'll go ahead and say put that in Australia Southeast. East would make more sense here. And I'll go ahead and say okay now. So that's going to go and create that project for me. It's going to create the simple ASP.NET web application, and it's going to go and provision the resource on Azure. So you'll see that creating the project is going to happen reasonably quickly. Once that's done, you'll then see the provisioning on Azure down the bottom. Okay, so there's the provisioning starting. So we've got that local template, the local project good to go. Now it's going up there, it's going to go and set up that resource for me in Azure, and I'm happy to let that go and do its job. Okay, that'll just take a moment to do. Okay, and that's good to go for me. You'll see up here that it's gone and put some of the scaffolding, some of the framework in place to make that a lot easier. I'm going to go ahead and close that for now. Let's add it to version control, that's always a good thing. So I'll right-click on my solution, add to source control. I'll go across to my Team Explorer, have a look at my pending changes. So there's the work item, there's my pending changes. I'll go ahead and say, let's check that in now. I'll go and give it a comment. That comment's going to be created the initial application, and we'll check that in. So this is going to take a moment. It's always that first 190 files there that it's going to push up for me. And it could have been bigger depending on exactly what I chose. If I'd have chosen an MVC application, of course, there's going to be a lot more files there. So usually we're not checking in quite that volume. My coding wouldn't normally affect or touch 190 files. Not in a positive way anyway. Okay, so that's gone up there. The next work item I've got to work on, so let's just go back over here and have a look at my work. It says that I've got to go and update the homepage. So I'll drag that into in progress, and no, we're not going to have to endure me doing any coding. I'll do a little cheat there. So I'm just going to pop down into the application, and I'm just going to drag a couple little files across there to make that a little quicker for us. Okay, that's good. So here's a unit test file. Whoops, give myself some room so I can see it. Let's drag the unit test across, copy that here and override it, grab the rest of it, drag that over here and override it. All right, so much more interesting than necessarily watching me code. So let's go to the Solution Explorer, Team Explorer, Home, Pending Changes. I'll go and promote that file, which is good. I'll go into the Solution Explorer and add that existing item. That was my calculations class. Great. Let's just do a quick rebuild there to make sure I haven't managed to botch that up. Okay, that's looking good. And usually I just go and publish it up to the cloud, but let's run it locally first. As I said, this is champagne coding. Pop that up, and we want to add 3 and 4 together. Oh, fantastic. Alrighty. That would have been humbling if that one didn't work. Okay, so let's go back over to Team Explorer. Let's go ahead and check those changes in. So there's my pending changes, and I'll say done the hard work now. And let's check that in. So of course, in terms of enterprise, class version control, there's a lot more to, just check in, check out. So I can go and set up whatever branches I want, shelving, change sets, the usual sorts of things that we'd want to work with. Okay, so that part's done. How about we go ahead and push this up to the cloud now? So what I'm going to do is right click on that, and we need an environment, a dev environment where we can go and work. So let's go and choose to publish the application. Okay, I'm going to use MS Web Deploy. You'll see that the details are automatically in there for me. I'll validate the connection to make sure it's all good. That should come back with a green tick, all things considered. Great. Okay, that's all good. I could do a preview here to see what's changed. Of course, there's nothing up there yet. So I'll go ahead and publish that. So what that's going to do now is that Azure website that I asked for in the project template, it's going to go and grab the outputs of my application, copy it up there, and then show me the application, hopefully, that's now hosted and running on an Azure website. Okay, so that's the URL we want. I'll take an opportunity just to quickly go and add that to my favorites. Make sure it's working up there. Let's throw 5 and 6 together. Oh, it's still working. Wonders never cease. All right, I'll do a little refresh here. Okay, we're starting to see some progress. Those cards are working their way across the board, so that's always a good sign. All right, back over here. So the next thing we want to have a look at is building. So why do we need to build? Didn't I just do that? Didn't I build that application and publish it straight to the cloud? So why would I need to build? What's build got to offer? Well, hopefully, you know, the answer is build has a lot to offer. I want to be able to go and create, a customized build as part of the build experience. When I've got multiple people working in the team, I want to be able to bring their code together, socialize it, deal with any issues. I want to be able to go and run my tests. I want to run unit tests and so on. You know, there's certainly a bit more. I want to calculate some of the code metrics and so forth. So there's a lot I want to do rather than just, you know, being able to simply go and publish that up to the cloud. So setting up a build is an important thing to do. Now, I have made a special note here that, you know, this is actually quite versatile. I'm going to take advantage of the cloud completely. I'm going to use the Elastic Build capabilities up in Azure. It's going to provision the build infrastructure for me, do the build, and then it's going to decommission that or throw that machine away so that another can be pulled out from a template. If I wanted to, it's reasonably straightforward to have a hybrid. I can say that I want to use everything up in the cloud, I want to use Visual Studio Online, but I'd like to use on-premises build infrastructure. And there can be some, you know, some good reasons for that. But this talk's all about getting it happening up in the cloud, and that's exactly what we're focusing on. So let's see how easy it is to go and create an automated build. We'll go one step further and we'll set it up as a continuous deployment build, so that every time that we do a check-in, we want to, you know, go and build it, we want to then go and deploy it out to a test region. Okay, let's see that in action. Alrighty. So I'm just going to pop up to Azure. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo, too many accounts. And what we should find up here is that web application that we've been working on. You'll see there's my simple calc, so I'll go ahead and select that. And you'll see an option here straight out of the box that says we want to integrate this with our source control. I'll say, sure, I want to set up deployment automatically from source control, please. So I'll select that. Where's the source code located? And in our case, it's Visual Studio Online. So now I need to set up some authorization. It says, what is the URL that we're using? Where is it? And that was, I've got to remember. Let's double check that. Okay, that's the name that I gave it at the very beginning, TechEdAU 2014. Let's grab a copy of that. Jump back over here, paste that in, and authorize it. Okay, so that just wires those two things up together. I'll accept that to give it rights and permissions to access my version control. It says, what is the repository that we want to deploy here? And it's going to be MySimpleCalc. It's the only one that's there, so that's a good choice. Okay, it goes and sets up that link for me automatically. And what it's going to do is it's going to create a build definition. And that build definition is going to have all the hard work automatically done for me. All right, so that looks pretty good so far. Let's go back over to Visual Studio now and see the results of it. I'll switch back over to Team Explorer, refresh the metadata. Back home, and let's go into builds and have a look. And what we see there is it's added MySimpleCalc_CD for continuous deployment. Okay, so if I dive back out of there, let's go and have a look at that build definition. Okay, so you'll see that we've got a trigger here, and that trigger has automatically been configured for continuous integration. So every time we check in, it's going to go and to trigger this build automatically. I'll go into our build defaults, have a quick peek there for you. And you'll see there that we're using the hosted build controller. So the build controller up in Visual Studio Online. I'll go into my process. And you'll see that we're using the TFVC continuous deployment template.12.xaml. Okay, it's going to load a few settings there for me. And of most interest is, I'll go down here to where it says deployment. Okay, a quick peek in there for those further up the back of the room. You'll see there that in this deployment section, it's got the Windows Azure deployment environment, and the environment is MySimpleCalc. I can choose to go in there and take a closer look at it just to see what information is automatically put in there. Okay. A little bit of a closer look. So you'll see there the deployment settings name, the particular subscription we're going to use, the website name is MySimpleCalc, and the Australia East web space. That all gets populated for me automatically when I wired those two things together. So I'll go ahead and say, all good, save that. Close out of there, and let's see if it works. So I'll switch back to Solution Explorer. Let's go into the default page, make a trivial change at the top. It doesn't get much simpler than... Alrighty, then this here in capital letters with plenty of typing errors and mistakes so that we'll know it's authentic. I'll save that, close it. Let's go ahead and check that in. Okay, so I'll pop back over here, go into my pending changes. Let's trigger a build and deploy. Let's check that in. Now, of course, what should happen now is that's going to fire that build off for me. So I'll switch back to here, go into my builds, and zoom in a little bit there. You'll see at the top there under my builds, we've got MySimpleCalc_CD number one. So this is the first build that was just triggered by that particular check-in. So that's going to, you know, that's going to take a little while, hopefully not too long. So it's going to go to the pool of build resources that are sitting up in the cloud for us. It's going to have one of those allocated. It's then going to connect. It's going to pull the source down, do the build, and then it's going to deploy that out to, that Azure web service site, so that my testers hopefully can get started and give me fast feedback back to the team as to whether we've broken too many things. Well, that's the theory anyway. So I'll dive back out of there. Now, while that's happening, I'm just going to switch back to our homepage. And as one of our main builds, I want the team to have good high visibility of that. So what I might do is jump up to builds up the top there. I'll go in and look at my build definitions, and let me zoom in a little bit over here. There's my build definition for MySimpleCalc_CD. I'm going to hit the drop down there, and I'm going to add it to my team favorites. Okay, so that's going to appear at the top there for convenience. I also want the team to be able to see it front and center, and you know, that's any stakeholder, any team member. So what I'll do here is we'll go back in there and I'll say I'd like to also pin that to the homepage. Okay, that's going to add a tile to the homepage that'll show me the results of the most recent 10 builds. Okay, so we'll let that go and do its business. I also think it's probably not a bad idea, or let's confirm that it's there. Okay, so there's the build tile that I just added. I'm going to go into my team room. So wouldn't it be nice if there was an area for us to collaborate? I'll go into the team room here. You'll see over there, I've only got two team members and I'm the only one in the room, but that's all right. I'm going to go and choose to manage my events. I'm going to say that I would like to be notified whenever anyone in the a member of the team room comes in and fires off that build. I'll save and close it. So now whenever the build happens, we're going to see in the conversation stream details about that build happening. All right. I won't stay there and wait for that to happen. So let's just pop back over here. Go back up to the right team project. Go into my build. Look at the queued build. And it looks like that's still going for us. Okay, so looks like the build's all done there. I think there's one or two little simple unit tests in there. Hopefully they're running. And we should be into the deploy stage of that with any luck. Okay, so if we have a look over deployed now, you'll see that we do have that deployment done. It shows who's done that deployment. I can choose to redeploy it at any time quickly and easily. Let's see if it is actually deployed there. So if I switch back over to here, dive into my favorites, have a look at that. Again, it was an incredibly simple change that I made. So we should see a little bit of different text at the top there, nothing too exciting. And of course, there it is. This here was the only change I made. So again, a trivial change, but it was that experience, the continual deployment. So we did the build, we did the deploy into a test region there. So that's available now, ready for our testers. Okay, let's jump back out of there. Okay, so the last thing we'll have a look at there is we've got an environment now set up where we can assemble the team, we can put our requirements in there, we can work with our source code, we can set up builds, we can set up automatic deployments out to one or more regions. I've kept it nice and easy by simply pushing out to a website. If I wanted to send out, if I change the type to a standard web type, I'll then have deployment slots. I can then switch between production and pre-prod environments quickly and easily. There's a lot more sophistication that I can work with there quickly and easily. But in the time we've got, we'll keep that a little easier. So then the next thing we want to be able to do is to go and test our solution. And the good news is we can go and use web-based test case management. We can go and create our test plans, test suites, test cases. We can execute those all with our cloud infrastructure as well, without necessarily, or with leveraging Azure to have those environments for me. So let's go and have a look at that as our last one. Alrighty. So I'm going to go and click on test up the top there. It's going to tell me that I don't have a test plan created yet. I'll go ahead and say I'd like to create that test plan, please. And if I zoom in there for a quick look, all you'll see is it's asking for the name of the test plan and, whoops, try that again. And it's showing me the particular iteration that this relates to. So I'll go in there and it's called Sprint 1, so I'll call the test plan Sprint 1. That's easy. So we create the test plan. Okay, over here, I want to create a requirements-based suite. So I want to be able to create a suite for the particular requirements we've got. I'll just have to zoom out there for a second. I'll give that a quick run. And what you'll see here are my two requirements. This particular suite's going to test the first. So I'll create that. And over here on the left-hand side, in our test plan, we now have a single test suite to test that first requirement. I'll go and say that I'd like to create a new test case, please. And I'll choose to use the grid, which is a newer experience in 2013. And in the grid, let's go and create a test case. Now, of course, many manual test cases today are written as a table in Word or in Excel, same experience. So this particular test case is going to be test adding two small numbers. And I'm going to start by saying, actually, I better grab the URL. That's going to help. Let's just go back to my application, borrow that URL, go back here and say, navigate to, we'll pop the URL in, enter 1 as the first number, enter 4 as the second number, click add numbers. This is just the best test case ever. And the expected result there, the result must be 5. And as a good stateless test, we'll go ahead and close the browser at the end of that. I'll go ahead and save that. So there's my first manual test case quickly and easily created. I'll switch back over to the list view. Zoom in so you can see that a little bit. So there's my first test case created in that test suite, ready for me to run it. So I'll go up here and say that I'd like to run that test case, please. I can run it in a web-based browser, a client, or I can choose, if I have Microsoft Test Manager installed, to go ahead and run that using the client. For now, I'll go ahead and just run that in the browser. And of course, I should have allowed pop-ups. Try that again. So let's go ahead and run that. Okay, so my test steps appear over there on the left-hand side. The first test step tells me to go ahead and open the browser, so I'll do that. I'll navigate to that particular URL, and I'm happy with that. It says enter 1, which I'll do, and I'm happy with that. Enter 4, happy with that. And then it says click add numbers. I'll go ahead and do that, and I have an expected result now. It says the result must be 5, and fortunately that is the correct answer. I'll go ahead and say that I'm happy with it, and now I'll close the browser. So I've created the test case, run the test case, and you'll see that the outcome here has now switched across to pass. With more time, it'll be far more interesting if we went and created a bug and created a nice information-rich bug to give back to the developers to work on. Time's going to beat us there. So let's dive back out of there for now. All right, switch back to here. All right, so we've gone in there and we've tested our solution. So where to from here? Well, we could go and create multiple environments quickly and easily. We could use release management for Visual Studio and introduce approvals-based release workflows. That's something that Grant's going to talk about tomorrow, so a session well worth attending. We could also enable application insights quickly and easily to give us some rich telemetry about, you know, is the application performing? Is the application available? Is the application succeeding? What's the usage look like? So that's a talk that the Adams are going to do for us this time tomorrow, maybe not exactly this time, but tomorrow afternoon. So well worth attending to see where we can go from there. So to summarize, we can basically use a combination of Windows Azure, Microsoft Azure and Visual Studio Online to provide the scaffolding to help us get from that great application idea straight across to the awesome lifestyle. Well, that's how it works, and that's how it should work. As a fact there, completing your session evaluations also helps accelerate you to an awesome lifestyle. Okay, that's a plea. Please complete your evaluations. That's really important for all presenters and, of course, for conference organizers. Some related content, so I've called out a few things there, some sessions that you might like to attend tomorrow. All right, so please complete your sessions evaluations there. I do have maybe 4 minutes there for anyone that might have some questions. There's the microphone. So if you've got some questions, I'm more than happy. Oh, thank you. More than happy to take a couple of questions, although I know I'm standing between you and beer. All right. And I'm just going to come up there so I can hear it, because I'm not going to go and put some headphones on. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
That's all right. Yeah. We're good.
In Visual Studio Online UI, so you can rearrange PBIs by dragging and dropping.
Absolutely. So reprioritization, up and down.
So that's the one product owners are going to use.
Yes.
Does that adjust business value or the backlog priority?
That's going to change the backlog priority.
Yes, so why I asked that question was we have faced some problems because of it, mm-hmm. because product owners need to be changing the business value. So is there a way to change that, or so how do we adjust our Scrum process according to that?
So the business... Wouldn't
oh,
this be picking
it
up?
Oh, never mind. Sorry.
We could have stereo. Yeah. All right, so the particular question there, which you guys all heard, so I won't repeat it to you. If a product owner needs to change the business value, about the only way is to simply open up that PBI item, change that number. I mean, there's no graphical way of doing that. And really changing the priority on the backlog, I mean, that should take business value as an input, but shouldn't necessarily be driven solely by the business value. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I can see people running over for the beers. I'd be doing that too if I could. All right, well, any other questions? Question up the front here, and we may have one more after that.
Just quickly, in terms of the environment that you show us using Visual Studio Online, can you do coding within the environment? Or?
So can you do coding? So coding inside the browser is not a great story. I think Grant Holliday had a session earlier today where he showed Monaco.
Oh, yeah, just the Monaco, but is that just the...
That's going to be about your only option I can think of for web-based coding. I mean, it's pretty tough to compete with the Visual Studio IDE.
That's a
pretty amazing environment, and I'm biased. One final opportunity, going once. All right, thanks very much, guys. Thanks. Oh, okay. He got in there just... Yes, I moved it to In Progress in the My Work tab in Team Explorer.
And when you completed your task, you just check in all the stuff. How they're reflected on the task board, where the item moves automatically to the completed... Was there...
Okay, so I realized you didn't have the microphone then, so let me repeat that question. So the question was, when I went in there, I went into the My Work hub in Team Explorer. I saw a list of work items that were assigned to me. I picked one up and moved it to In Progress. That changes the state of that work item, which means that it was reflected by moving across in the board. When I had some pending changes and I checked in, there was an option there to either resolve the work item or to associate with that work item, and the default is resolve. So when I checked in, it resolved the work item, which is why it moved across to the final column in the task board. Guys, thanks very much. I'll be over there at drinks tonight. So. Thank you.